This is the Morning Brief from the Economic Times.
New COVID variant detected in South Africa. That's exactly what I saw on my TV screen a few days ago. And like many others, my first reaction was literally, "Ayyo!" And at that point, the only background music that seemed to suit the situation was this one. There's a new COVID variant out there, and it has created quite a stir just as things felt like they were finally getting back to normal. This variant is called Omicron, and it has been termed as a variant of concern by the WHO. In today's episode, we're going to find out just how concerning this is, while also shedding light on the implications that this could have on the markets, different sectors like aviation and hospitality, and more importantly, the consequences that this could have for people like you and me. It's Thursday, December 2nd. From the Economic Times, I'm Diya Rekhi, and you're listening to Omicron, What's the Concern? On the Morning Brief. In today's episode, we speak to Amish Adalja, a senior scholar at the John Hopkins Center for Health Security, and ET's Tina Thacker about this new variant and what it means for India. Also, stay tuned as we speak to ET's Anirban Chaudhary about the new travel restrictions that have come into force from December 1. Before we get started though, listen in to what WHO's chief scientist Dr. Soumya Swaminathan had to say about the classification of Omicron.
And the reason why it's been called a variant of concern is because of the mutations that it has, that have been observed. Very many mutations, about 30 mutations on the spike protein. And some of them are known because they've been seen in other variants before. We know that they are associated either with better transmissibility or with some extent of immune evasion. And that's the reason why it's called a variant of concern. So that we can really put a lot of focus and attention and study it further.
While you heard how I reacted to this news, here's how Dr. Manoj Kumar AS, who is an MD in internal medicine, processed this piece of information.
When I heard about this Omicron, it was a panic attack because of what we went through in the second wave of COVID. We were helpless. There are patients for whom I have declared death who are younger to me. Being in that scenario was very horrible. Working in COVID is not only physical, then you're going to wear PPE and work for 6 to 8 hours. Once you're in PPE, you can't have food, you can't drink water. It's very suffocating to work. Physically, it is very tiring. Mentally, very exhausting because taking so much of psychological trauma, it is very scary. And I basically don't want another wave of COVID. It is not something which we can bear or which we are ready to face. That's what I feel.
Prompted by Manoj, I asked Tina about what could happen if Omicron makes its way to India.
If Omicron enters the country, it may have a very, devastating effect. The government has been reviewing the situation closely. The hospitals say that they are gearing up. We can just hope that we are prepared well and learned our lessons well from the second wave, which caught us unawares. States are also saying that they have started expanding their health infrastructure to ensure availability of essential equipments, drugs, and ICU beds. We are seeing that there are a lot of meetings going on in the health ministry with the states. So we can just hope that things will be better this time.
So does that mean we're heading in for a third wave?
Indian experts say that it's premature to say if we are heading towards the third wave. The active cases in India are on a decline. But the problem is that there are increased public gatherings, public outings that are a worrying sign. Schools have opened up too. Lax measures can cause cases to rise. But otherwise, it's premature to say that we are heading towards the third wave.
I'm wiping off some beads of sweat from my forehead right now. Phew, that's really some relief, I suppose. But before we celebrate, it's important to understand what this new variant is all about. Amish helps us decode this.
The Omicron variant has a cluster of mutations that are very concerning because these mutations have been seen before in other variants, such as the beta and gamma variant, and have been associated with decreased response to the vaccines, decreased response to the monoclonal antibodies. And there are also some mutations there that have been associated with increased transmissibility. And then there's a group of mutations that have not been seen before. So this cluster of mutations, coupled with the fact that this seems to be increasing in southern Africa, has led the WHO to take this very seriously and try to characterize what all of these mutations mean and where to really stratify this new variant in our risk matrix of COVID-19 variants.
But how exactly is Omicron different from the Delta variant?
So the Delta variant does have a lot of unique mutations that have made it the most transmissible variant that we've seen to date. But those mutations are distinct from those seen in Beta and Gamma and Omicron. And I think that has to do with how these things evolve. And the Delta variant has really been a deadly version of this virus because it is so transmissible, but it hasn't posed much of a problem for our vaccines or for our monoclonal antibodies, even though breakthrough infections became more common with the Delta variant. So there is a concern that this might be able to cause more of a problem for our vaccines, for our monoclonal antibodies in the Delta variant. It remains to be seen. Because the Delta variant is such a transmissible version of this virus, it's been very hard for other variants to take hold, such as Lambda, for example, because Delta outcompetes it. It is going to be really interesting to see how Omicron fares in a place where Delta is much more prevalent than it was in South Africa, because South Africa was having a lull in cases when Omicron appeared. Delta's claim to fame, if you want to say that, is that it's more transmissible. Omicron, the worry is it may be more transmissible, but it also may be more vaccine evasive.
The Delta variant, if you remember, was first identified in India in December 2020 and spread rapidly throughout the country, while also making its way to the UK and the US. According to Yale Medicine, the Delta variant is currently the predominant COVID variant that accounts for more than 99% of COVID-19 cases. That leads one to ask whether the Omicron variant has the potential to be more severe than the Delta variant. But Amish said that this wasn't the case.
There is no evidence that this variant is more severe than Delta. What we've seen in variants is more transmissible and more vaccine evasive. Viruses tend to evolve towards more transmissibility, more ability to evade the immune system than they do for more lethality, because it doesn't serve the virus's interests, if it has interests, to be incapacitating people, because then it's not going to have the same opportunities to spread. Oftentimes with respiratory viruses, they tend towards evolution towards a milder symptom spectrum so that people can go about their daily life and infect other people. So I don't suspect that we're going to find that this is more deadly.
The Omicron variant was first detected in Botswana on November 11th and 3 days later in South Africa. Since then, it has been detected in a number of other countries as well, including Australia, Germany, Hong Kong, Israel, Japan, the Netherlands, Portugal, and the UK. When asked about how widespread Omicron is, this is what Amish had to say.
We know that this is present in many countries, not just in the Southern African nations. There is already evidence that this was spreading in the Netherlands even before it was discovered by scientists in South Africa. So this tells you that it is widespread. Every day, more and more countries get added to the list. And I assume that much more spread has occurred. It's just not detected. Because in order to detect that variant or any variant, you have to do sequencing in a systematic way. Most countries don't do enough sequencing. In the United States, it's maybe around less than 5% of our cases get sequenced. So you don't really ever have a full picture of all the variants circulating in a given country. And that can be repeated all over the world. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you how much India sequences. I don't think they're at the top of the list of countries that sequence. And I think that's the best way to prepare for variants is to have a robust sequencing operation in place where a significant proportion of your cases are getting sequenced. It's not as if you need to sequence 100% of cases, but you can't be in the single digits and expect to have a good picture of what's going on.
One of the measures that several countries are adopting is to seal their borders in a desperate bid to curb the spread of the virus. Countries like Australia, Brazil, Canada, a few in the European Union, Iran, Japan, Thailand, and the US have imposed restrictions on various southern African countries after the new variant was detected. But is this really effective?
Border closures, travel bans are not effective. If you look, for example, at the US's travel ban, it does not even apply to US citizens or US permanent residents. It only includes certain countries in Southern Africa, even though we know that there is community spread in the Netherlands and Belgium and Scotland. It's a political tool because politicians feel the need to do something, even if it's 100% the wrong thing to do. And the travel bans and border closures cause major problems. So for example, in South Africa right now, they're having problems getting reagents to do the experiments that we also desperately want the answers to, because there is less air traffic going into South Africa because of these travel bans all around the world. It's also the case that we want countries to report when they have an unusual infectious disease, when they discover a new COVID variant. We want them to rapidly characterize it, alert the world, and allow the science to take place. If what a country like South Africa gets is not praise for this scientific adeptness that they've shown, but punishment, what is the incentive for the next country that finds an interesting variant to actually report it if what they're going to get is basically economic ruin and be stigmatized? So I don't think that these work, and I think they have massive negative consequences, and I think they're silly, and it's silly to believe that this variant is not in other countries, especially countries that have initiated the travel bans.
So what can be done from a policy standpoint to curb the spread of the virus and its variants? Amish said that vaccination was the most powerful tool that we possessed. He said he was not surprised that mutations were arising in countries with low vaccination rates.
This is an important lesson for the world, that if you allow this virus to spread unchecked in one part of the world that doesn't have high levels of vaccination, it will put you at danger as well, because now the whole world is disrupted. It's really important that when we think about this pandemic, we think globally. We think about getting first and second doses into people all around the world, because that's how we truly, as a species, put this pandemic behind us and make it something much more manageable.
India has conducted over 124 crore COVID vaccinations, with around 45 crore people receiving both doses of the vaccine. This accounts for around 33% of the population being fully vaccinated. One of the ongoing debates has been on whether we should begin vaccinating children. For that, I got Tina to tell us what the latest buzz is.
Unlike the Western countries, we have a really large pool of people that remain unvaccinated, which are the children. According to the health ministry and other experts, there are about like 44 crore children in this age group between 2 to 18 years. So they pose an additional risk since the country is yet to begin vaccinating this group. The government is firm that while children will eventually need to be vaccinated and will be given vaccination, but their priority at present is to complete the vaccination for its adult population.
Not just this, with all of this talk about Omicron, there's been a lot of chatter about the need for a booster shot for citizens. But is that really a viable option?
The booster doses too, according to the government, should wait till a larger proportion of the adult population who are more at risk of the disease is vaccinated. The National Technical Advisory Group on Immunization, which is the advisory group to the government, is expected to meet soon to decide on the policy on booster doses. But I think it will take some time. They may come up with an additional dose for people who are immunocompromised. But still, there is a long way to go, because they are very firm with the notion that first all adults in the country should get at least two doses, and then they will think about giving additional dose or a booster dose to other people.
The Oxford scientists are still working on, and we hopefully will launch, if required, in 6 months, a new vaccine, which is directly a vaccine which could be a booster dose, which is specifically targeting the Omicron and other variants found on that continent.
That was Adar Poonawalla, the chief of Serum Institute of India, which manufactures Covishield, speaking about rolling out a booster dose for Omicron shortly. But that will take some time, so I asked Amish about what should India's takeaway be amidst all of this chaos.
The lesson for India is that India is not spared from COVID-19. You have to be vigilant and you have to get more vaccine into people. You have to make sure that you have public health infrastructure to test people, to do isolation. You have to make sure that you have hospital capacity. You have to have the infrastructure to be able to deal with these waves, not just for COVID, but for influenza or whatever the next pandemic may be. So it's not as if you get through a wave and then you think, okay, it's over, because it's not over, because COVID-19 is going to be with us forever. There are going to be new variants. And unless you have your population with high levels of immunity, you're going to be subject to that type of disruption again. There is an opportunity in the world and in India, I suppose, as well, to actually tell your policymakers, to tell your prime minister that this is something that needs to be prioritized, that we can't go through these waves again, that the solutions are apparent. They've been apparent for decades, that you have to have public health infrastructure. You have to have hospital preparedness, and you have to think about infectious disease emergencies the way you think about national security. And I think that's the lesson of this pandemic for the entire world.
We've spoken about this being a variant of concern for the WHO, but it's important to realize that it isn't just the WHO that's concerned about this new variant.
Generally speaking, the unknown is the most fearful thing for most people, and therefore they react with fear and react by selling in the market, which probably is not a good thing, because at the end of the day, this kind of volatility will be over and the market will continue to move. But generally speaking, the situation does not look good at this stage. And as you know, markets come down, Indian markets come down somewhat, and other markets have reacted negatively. But it's really an unknown variant, and we have to learn more about what it is actually. But in the meantime, people are very fearful.
That was Mark Mobius, founder of Mobius Capital Partners, who spoke to CNBC TV 18 about the markets being spooked by Omicron. Swiss brokerage UBS Securities said India is all set to remain among the fastest growing emerging markets till FY23, assuming that the activity derailed by the outbreak of COVID-19 continues to normalize and the mobility restrictions are gradually removed. But UBS was quick to add, and I quote, "New flare-ups of COVID infections, and particularly the emergence of new COVID strains, against which currently available vaccinations provide little or no protection, are probably the biggest downside risk." India's main stock indices lost 3% on Friday amid fears of the new variant, and they've been volatile this week. Both the Sensex and Nifty 50 indices gained over 1% on Wednesday. Other Asian markets too seem to have absorbed the initial Omicron variant news, as all major indices closed higher on Wednesday. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was up 0.78% on Wednesday, after slumping 1.6% on Tuesday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average too fell by 600 points or 1.7% on Tuesday. While markets might be jittery, the aviation sector too is on tenterhooks. I turn to ET's Anirban, who you'd be familiar with as one of the hosts of The Morning Brief, to give us some perspective on the kind of recovery that the aviation sector has seen recently.
Just in a nutshell, 2 million passengers flew across the country in June 2020, just after the first wave. Shoots up to 8 million in Feb 2021 as things start getting back to normal. Then a slump to 3 million again in June as the second wave peaks, and then now 9 million in October. So we are still behind pre-COVID numbers, which was, say, 12 million in October 2019. But we are getting there fairly steadily. Internationally, the demand story is even more stark.
The center on Wednesday said there will be no resumption of international flights as of now. When I spoke to Anirban, he mentioned that there will be confusion, and it has begun. Yesterday, the Maharashtra government mandated a 7-day institutional quarantine from 11:59 p.m. December 2nd for all passengers flying in from at-risk countries. They also have to undergo RT-PCR tests upon landing and on the 2nd, 4th, 7th day after arrival. All this will create massive confusion. In fact, the center has asked states not to come up with their own guidelines and stick to the ones implemented by the center. If you'd recollect, this whole different rules at the center and state level was disastrous during the second wave.
So this has created a lot of confusion among passengers. So there have been cancellations for sure. And there have been a lot of queries. So airlines and travel companies have been inundated with queries. And there's always this question of refunds, because refunds were a mess in during COVID. I mean, there were millions of passengers who didn't get refunds even as their flights were cancelled. So lots of concerns around that.
Another sector that is on edge is hospitality. To gauge sentiment, I spoke to Tarun Mahadevan, Business Development Manager at Advantage Foods, about what the possibility of a third wave means for this space.
If a third wave does come, people with strong balance sheets will really continue to thrive. People with weaker balance sheets will definitely face some challenges. But the companies that have dealt with the first wave and second wave will have further learning, so they'll be able to capture on that more. I suppose there may be a certain amount of increased or enhanced consolidation in the industry, which will probably, it won't be as large as the first or second wave, but there will be a certain amount that will happen even in the third wave.
COVID is like a Hindi serial lead who refuses to die. You can push him off a cliff, run him over with a truck, or poison him, and he'll still land up at your door, arms outstretched, with a scratch or two and maybe some amnesia. With the wedding season in full swing and the holiday season approaching, it does seem like COVID-19 is going to have quite a jolly time spreading infection. Every guest I spoke to, though, emphasized the need to not be lax at this point and follow all the COVID-appropriate behavior. Hopefully, that way we'll be able to dodge a third wave. Let's say our prayers, but more than that, it's probably time for us to pull up our masks. You are listening to Omicron, What's the Concern? On The Morning Brief with me, your host, Diya Rekhi. Producers Nehal Chalyawala from The Economic Times and Varun Kapahi from Awaaz. Sound editor Swati Joshi from Awaaz. Executive producer Arijit Barman. All external sound clips used in this episode belong to their respective owners. Credits mentioned in the description.